Hello, I'm Jan Kepler, and this is Two Voices, One Journey.
And I'm Frank Kudla. This is the place to go when you want to hear two extraordinarily ordinary people talk about things that interest them. So, Jan, it's been a couple of days since we did our last episode. A couple of things have been going on in general. First of all, watched a Formula race this weekend. It was from Las Vegas.
Yeah, that was exciting.
It was an exciting race. Verstappen won. And what made it really interesting afterwards, the entire McLaren team was disqualified. Their vehicle was out of spec, or their car was out of spec. And so that put Piastri and Norris with no points, which now allowed... Piastri, and Verstappen are now tied with 366 points. Norris has 390. So anything can happen. There's two more races left. One is in Doha, Qatar. It used to be a motorcycle track, but it looks pretty cool. And then the last race, I think the Qatar race is a nighttime race. I'm not sure. Or the Abu Dhabi is a nighttime race, and that's on 12/7. So anyway, that should be fun.
Yeah.
We still got two more races, and then...
And then nothing for 3 months.
No.
To get until March.
I think the next thing we'll be watching are the basketball playoffs. I don't think there's much else happening.
That's
yeah. And then there'll be the, it'll be the Final Four before the basketball playoffs.
Oh.
Before NBA.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fun to watch. So anyway, sitting on the table is a cat that was in our last podcast. If you listened to that, you heard her pretty much loud and clear. She's sitting on our desk right now, and she is an asshole. She does a couple of things that are just kind of unsavory, and I know some of them are characteristics that all cats have, or behaviors that all cats have, but one, she bites.
A lot. And she... It's just so weird because she'll be happy, she's purring and in your lap or whatever, and then all of a sudden she just turns around and chomp.
Yeah, she doesn't break the skin.
No.
But it hurts. It's a pinch.
That's what it is. It's a pinch. She's just very bitey. It's in her nature, and we unfortunately can't get it out of her. She doesn't seem to get the hint that we don't like it.
Yeah.
She just wants to do it anyway. I don't know.
Yeah. I think her second most annoying characteristic is her tripping us. She just seems to go out of her way. And I know she doesn't mean to do it. She follows Jan around because she's attached to Jan. But she gets under my foot. In fact, I stepped on her a couple days ago in the kitchen. And that's dangerous for both of us. At our age, falling down is not a good idea.
It's dangerous for her, too. If she kills us, who's going to feed her?
That's
her scooper poops. So I keep trying to impress that upon her.
And furniture.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good God. Yeah, the chairs now, the newer chairs that we have, they have kind of a boucle sort of finish to them because it's, and that's from the cat. It's both arms are like that now. So I don't know what to do. She didn't do it before.
No.
The other furniture, I don't know what made her start now, but now I'm afraid to get anything new.
So. Well, she does it on every piece of furniture that's down there. I mean, it's her
chair.
Oh, yeah. Though. Well, not that much, yeah. But she's put some scratches on that.
Oh, well.
Anyway.
It's cat-like.
When you have a cat, you have an asshole. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're looking forward to Thanksgiving coming up in, 3 days? Mm-hmm. And we do the usual stuff, the turkey, cranberry sauce, stuffing, green beans, although I know you won't be having any of those.
It's okay. I'll cook them, but I'm not eating.
Yeah. And the thing I really love about it is the after-day turkey sandwiches. I use turkey, mayo, jellied cranberry sauce, and salt and pepper. Jan puts stuffing on hers.
And not just stuffing. I mean, I have turkey, mayo, cranberry sauce, and then a little bit of stuffing.
Yeah.
The stuffing's good. It's got onions and salt.
It just seems like stuffing with bread is...
It's carbo-loading, but yeah. It's good. It's part of the festive season.
So on to a more serious note, Trump's gun. There's a gun company, and I the name escapes me right now. Do you remember it?
It's Bond.
Bond.
I think, I don't know. They're advertising
as Bond Firearms. If you want one, look up Bond, Google Bond or watch Fox News and you'll see the ad for it. Anyway, the gun is engraved with a living legend, fight, 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 and Trump 47, plus a couple other things that are on there.
It's highly etched, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And it's got Trump's wavy hairline on it too. It's the whole thing is yeah. But it's the model, I think, is the 47DT.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, it's not gold.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Trump is directly involved in it, but I'm sure he doesn't mind it, except for the part that, of course, he can't own one because he's a convicted felon. So
I don't know if that's ironic or just justice. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, gold shoes, Bibles, and now guns.
There is another company that's making a Colt 45 that says Trump 45 on it, and that one is gold. And it doesn't have any other engravings on it. It just says Trump 45. So if you want to commemorate his presidency, go get a gun.
Or, pick which one you want for Christmas, Frank. And
then
ask the cat to have it for you.
Okay. I don't think you want to get me a gun.
No, we don't want the cat to have a gun either.
So on to the other big topic. Actually, it was a pretty big topic today because there were some discussions going on between our side with Secretary of State Marco Rubio and the representatives from Ukraine saying that they've made some adjustments to what I'm about to talk to you, but they're not releasing the details. So I have no idea what went on today in detail. But anyway, my feeling is that this conflict is an existential hazard to all Western nations. Russia cannot win. Putin will keep testing the red line. Poland is next, and they've already flown drones into Poland, supposedly by accident. But over Europe, they've had like 187 sightings or something like that of drones, and they're over military installations.
Yeah, by accident. How convenient.
Yeah, they're pretty certain it's not private operators that are doing it. They do believe that. Well, they think it's Russia, the European Union.
They also shot a bunch of the stuff down, and all the parts, and they have serial numbers on them, so they can track where they were built.
Well, those were the ones that Putin claims were an accident that accidentally flew in. I think there were 20 some of them, and they were shot down by our missile defense systems in Poland. So they landed in Poland. I mean, they were shot down over Poland. Yeah. And you're right; those were definitely Russian, and Russia admitted to it.
No, I know, and I think they swung through Belarus first.
Okay, well, yeah, that's what they came over. Is
the on ramp to the rest of Western Europe?
Yeah. So the Trump 28. What is it? 28.
It was 28 point
peace. 28 point peace plan calls for a couple of things. First of all, before we even get into this peace plan, the thing we have to consider is that, and this is in his defense, is that a peace plan, if there is a ceasefire, is probably going to be better than the suffering and bloodshed and death that goes on right now. But I still feel Ukraine's got to win this thing. But Ukraine is supposed to give up land that it hasn't even lost yet. I think it's the whole Donbas region or something, which would give them, which would give Russia about 25% of the nation, not counting Crimea.
I think something, or almost a third, because that was what.
Oh, a third?
I think so, because that was the other another condition. One of the points was they had to give up, I think, reduce their military.
They have to reduce their military by a third. They have to recognize Crimea as part of Russia. That was taken in 2014. That's the only thing on there that I think is reasonable. They're not going to get Crimea back, the peninsula. That's not going to be there. And also, they're excluded from any future NATO membership. Then today, there was some discussion by a commentator that might not be a forever promise that they can't join NATO. There may be some point. They're not prepared to join NATO right now, apparently, even if they were allowed to. And anyway, punchline is, this is not a peace plan. This is a capitulation.
Oh, absolutely. It's a surrender. And I think it's absolutely horrible of us, Trump, to present that as a peace plan. That's just bullshit. And it's Putin's plan. It's everything that Putin wants. It's you know, yes, it would be a ceasefire. Yes, it would stop people from being killed. One of the main reasons people are being killed is because Russia started it, and it's bombing. They're bombing civilians now to try to break their spirit. I mean, they've just been absolutely horrible. They shouldn't get anything out of this. I just wish that Europe would really arm up and go bomb the crap out of Russia, because our administration isn't going to do it. And I'm not saying we should send in soldiers and stuff like that, but we just spent so much time. And I don't know, it's hand-wringing, dinking around. I mean, it's like in the beginning, we were for Ukraine, we were sort of supporting it. And then it just sort of, I don't know, all turned into Gaza and Israel. And the struggle in Ukraine was forgotten, and nobody was interested in funding it anymore. And you're right. I think it really is. It will affect the entire world, but Western Europe especially. And it's just a terrible thing for the United States to be colluding with Russia on this. I think it's really bad business, bad luck.
Yeah. Well, I don't agree with you on bombing Russia. I think that's going over a red line for us. But I think giving the missiles, the long-range missiles necessary, give them to Ukraine.
First of all, I just think we just need to arm the hell out of them.
Yes.
Go bomb the crap out of them. No, I don't mean for us to do it. But it's amazing that they've held on for as long as they have. And that's the other thing. I know, you know, there's been all this death and destruction and everything else, but to just capitulate, to just give up, and give up more than Russia was even able to, you know, get, and just neuter themselves completely for some shaky sort of promises from Russia that they don't normally keep anyway. Who's to say they're just not going to come back and again later?
If this original plan goes through and they have a third of the country, they'll be right on top of Kiev.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they can just rearm, get some more bodies to throw into the meat grinder, that is the front line, and attack again. Whether it's a year from now, 2 years from now, they'll be in a better position to do it. So
I just think our supporting it is just despicable. And I think I used to think that Trump, it was just a bromance, that he just so much admired Putin and what Putin was able to do in his country because he's an authoritarian. But it's gone beyond that. He has just got to know that Putin is just making a fool out of him. And a lot of people think that. They think that, you know, that he just looks very weak. And that's just not Trump-like. So I don't know what Putin's got on him.
Oh, that's the other thing they did. And then we'll move on to a domestic topic. Okay. But Trump has backed off on the Thanksgiving deadline.
Which is stupid.
It was stupid to begin with.
I know. And he just wants a peace prize.
Yeah, well. He's not going to be getting it. Anyway, here domestically, the internal divides developing in each party are becoming vituperative. Jan likes that word. It means nasty, kind of ugly. Not unlike our national divide. Can't we just have a civil and respectful discourse? It appears not. Do we need a third party other than the socialists? Maybe the moderates?
Yeah, like the Raging Moderates, the podcast we like. That's Scott Galloway. And who's the
Jessica Tarloff?
Jessica Tarloff, yeah, they are so good.
She's from Fox too, which is interesting.
Yeah, and I just love Scott Galloway. I think he's great. He's super smart. And Raging Moderates, I think that's a great name. Just the extremist on the left and the right are just ridiculous. It's time to get serious and be adults.
Yeah, it is. The other podcast that Scott's involved in, and I've read all his books, it's Scott Galloway, and I believe it's profgalloway.com if you want to go to his website, and he puts out a weekly newsletter. Anyway, the other two, one is called Pivot, which is basically on technology, although they do venture into some other topics. They sometimes come off the rails a little bit, but that's Scott and Kara Swisher, who was a technology reporter for the Wall Street Journal for a long time, and she's still very involved in the tech industry. So that's a pretty interesting one. Then there's another one, which is called Prof G, which is basically investments and money matters. And that's with Scott. And I don't remember who his sidekick is, but they're pretty good too. But that one pretty much sticks to the topic of money.
But there's just smart, just intelligent people.
Yeah.
Having thoughtful conversations. I really enjoy them.
Well, even when I disagree with them, they make me think.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. And they can't ask for anything more out of a podcast if it makes you think. Nope. So also domestically, affordability has become the latest demagogy buzzword. Everybody's talking about affordability. And I want to talk about a couple of things that are really a big parts of that affordability. One, of course, is the housing situation. Both interest rates and the prices of house, although they've come down a little bit, we just don't have a sufficient supply. We're not building homes quickly enough or as many as we need. I forget the estimates. We need a couple of million homes in order to house the people that want to be housed, that would probably qualify for it too if it wasn't insane. So that's an effect on the affordability front. Also, the cost of healthcare. Yeah. That's a big one. I read somewhere that there are some people that are paying more monthly for their health care than they are for their mortgage.
Oh, that's very realistic. I can totally understand. I can totally believe that.
Yeah, well, if you took our health care costs and we lived in the Midwest.
Right. Oh, yeah. Or you had a mortgage that you got into 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Or it's just, yeah.
If you have a $2,000 mortgage, which is a reasonable number.
It used to be.
Yeah. The insurance costs, our insurance costs would easily outrun that. But anyway, we spend a lot of time, but I don't really spend a lot of time. A lot of people spend a lot of time shitposting the insurance industry as the flint that ignited these price increases. And while people pay the insurance companies, the real cause or culprit in this is literally the cost of healthcare. The insurance companies do make a profit, and if you find a system that walks around them, you could take out that profit, which would amount to 3 to 5%. That's all it would really reduce things by. And part of it is the cost of an MRI, for example, here in France is $400 for an MRI. In the United States, it's $2,400. So the insurance companies are having to cover that. So I think the inflation on the cost of medicine is what's doing it.
Oh, yeah, because for us, our copay is like $350 for an MRI.
For an MRI, yeah.
So France is just paying for it out of pocket. And I agree with you. I think the price of medicine, medical procedures, whatever, they're all inflated artificially because they know that insurance will only pay a certain percentage of it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't really have a solid answer. I'm going to give you one that Scott Galloway proposed. And I know this seems like a Scott Galloway issue, or not an issue, an episode. Yes. Yeah, we're definitely fanboys and fangirls. But I'm really the furthest thing from a socialist. But when it comes to medicine, I'm willing to make a compromise. And Scott Galloway on the Pivot Show, well, I think it was either on the Pivot Show or on Raging Moderates, had proposed that the age eligibility for Medicare be reduced by 2 years every year for 10 years. That would take us down to about, 45, we thought?
Yeah, 45.
And the people under 45 probably don't need health care. But this would allow for the transition because all the industries, the insurance industry, the health care providers, and the enrollees in the program, I'll have to adjust to this. Sure. So by doing it gradually, I think that just allows us for a transition. And then the money that would normally have been paid to the insurance companies by those 45 and older would turn into taxes.
Yeah.
And then the government would cover. And Medicare is pretty good.
Oh, it is. Yeah. No, it's actually, it's very good. So I know it is very close to socialized medicine, but everybody else does it.
Yeah, so. I don't see any other way to handle it. And I know we have probably superior Europe. I don't know if we're really superior.
Yeah.
But other things other than the healthcare is grocery costs are absolutely ridiculous, and that's the one we really feel. Jan and I really feel that one.
Yeah, and you can see it, and so I don't care what anybody says about prices going down and that sort of thing. They're not. They've gone up. And the other thing that burns me is talking about inheriting inflation. This administration inherited inflation. I'm not saying that it didn't, but the inflation came from COVID. It was the pandemic. So it wasn't mismanagement on the part of the previous administration when it comes to economics, in my opinion, from an inflation standpoint. So, but I mean, we were coming off of that, and I agree that that was high, but it came down and now it's going up again. And I think that has a lot to do with tariffs.
Yeah, it's going up. It's going up a little bit, but it is going up. Certainly it's not coming down. And that was what was promised in the campaign. Yeah. Trump said on the first day he's going to bring prices down. Well, I think inflation is probably going to always be with us. Through my entire lifetime, it's been with us. I think the only time the prices went down was during the Great Depression. They had a deflation. Is that, I guess that's what it would be. That's a retrograde inflation, but that was during the Depression, and prices just simply don't go down. They may go up slower. The Fed wants to have a 2% inflation rate. I think it's at 3.4.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about that, which is a couple of tenths of a percentage point higher than it was when Trump was inaugurated. And then the other thing that's happening is wages just are not keeping up with the inflation.
Yeah.
And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but somebody went through that, and for inflation adjusted income, it would be substantially higher. Like minimum wage would be $15 or $16 now.
Yeah. Well, no, and it should be. I mean,
yeah, at least.
Yeah, really, because in the last, I'd say definitely the last 30 years, the cost of cars, homes, renting, you know, major purchases, big expenses, things that you kind of sort of need to have, health insurance, have steadily increased. And wages haven't.
Yeah. Well, I was looking back through some of our Ralph purchases, and I would say in the last 3 or 4 years, our grocery bill is up 20 to 25%. That's significant. And we're not really extravagant in our purchases.
No, but I do get a dollar off gas at the Shell station across the street because we spend so damn much money at Ralph's. So at least we get a little bit of something back. But it is for two people, what we spend is kind of...
Yeah, it's a little bit extreme. But the other thing, we talked about the inflation and the impact that tariffs are probably having on it. Big corporations are taking the easy way out in regards to cost cutting by eliminating jobs.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really, I mean, they're making up for it. They're absorbing some of these price increases. At some point, they're not going to be able to.
Right.
And that's going to get passed along to the consumers because tariffs are taxes.
And this year has been... the highest in corporate layoffs. So it's not just the government. It's not just, you know, federal government, DOGE, whatever. It's the, you know, private sector.
Yeah.
Massive amounts of layoff.
Yeah.
And this is even before AI is supposed to be replacing a lot of people. And I think some companies are saying, you know, it's in preparation for AI, or they're converting some things, but it's just been really bad. And I think that's one of the ways that companies have been able to absorb some of the costs. And they're not going to be able to do it.
Well, some of the AI companies I've read in the last couple of days are sort of softening their message on AI a little bit, talking about how AI is going to increase worker productivity, not necessarily replace the worker entirely. I don't think that's true. I think AI will replace a lot of workers. And if inflation stays where it is and the tariffs really kick in, the corporation is going to pass that along. So that's not going to be a...
it's not going to get better.
No, no. And I'm not saying it's going to be apocalyptic, but it's not going to be... it's not going to be a pleasant year, I think, in 2026.
No, I agree with you. I think financially it's going to be a stretch. And ever since the pandemic, the recovery, they're calling it a K-shaped economy. And I really like that because it's so descriptive, because we're really... recovering, I guess, from the pandemic, which, you know, economically was a problem for a lot of people, on two entirely different trajectories. There's the, well, let me just read you this little thing that I printed back here, which I agree with. K-shaped economy, widely touted in the financial press, is the latest expression of wealth inequality. The U.S. economy is experiencing a growing gap between the highest earners and the richest corporations, who are spending and expanding their wealth, and the lowest income households and mom and pop companies who struggle to pay their bills day to day. So those folks are going down. The wealthier folks, the sky's the limit for them. And they're the ones looking at the stock market. And honestly, I believe that as far as the economy goes, and inflation is probably totally different. I mean, I'm not an economist, but as far as the economy goes, basing it on the stock market's success.
Your impression of the economy.
Yes, your impression of the economy based on the success of the stock market isn't representative of the majority of people in the United States. And so I think that's a little false. And then also, too, when you talk about spending, because we were talking about the GDP for the United States, mm-hmm. What is it? It's over 50% is consumer spending.
Yes, it's consumer spending. And then half of that spending is the top 10%.
Right.
So if they're watching the stock market and they're using that as a barometer of the economy, they're certainly using it as a barometer of what's in their pocket. Right. If the stock market goes through a correction, which many people are predicting in the next quarter or two, that it will go through a 15 to 25% correction. Now, that'll probably just take it down to where it was a year and a half ago or 2 years ago or something like that. But it will certainly cause the top 10% to hold onto their wallets a little bit tighter, hold onto their purse strings just a little bit tighter. If they do that, they're affecting half of all consumer purchases, which is over half of our GDP.
Right. So that's going to have a huge effect.
Yeah.
Because right now, I think the middle class, lower income folks that don't have a lot of discretionary income, they're tightening their belts now on the staples, the things that they have to have. And so we're just not really seeing that because there's this distorted view of the uber wealthy that are still feeling real good about their portfolio and are buying a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, the delta between the haves and have-nots is growing. We talked about this in an episode or two ago about how we're divided politically, but we are certainly economically divided. I mean, we're divided by age and some other things too. But so we'll see. But I do like the K-shaped economy thing. It does look like a K. These are going up. These are going down. The other thing I wanted to talk about, this kind of sticks in my craw, and it has to do with the stock market, is the incestuous investments by the big AI players. What I'm meaning is one AI player gives money or invests in another AI player. The AI player that received the investment reciprocates by buying services or product from the person that gave them the money in the first place. Now, I know that sounds convoluted, but it's like me lending Jan $10 and her buying from me something that I have for $8.
Well, and then we're both declaring it as a sale.
Yeah.
So it just looks like we're making ourselves look better.
Yeah.
But we're just trading money back and forth.
Well, for example, Microsoft's Azure Cloud Services put $30 billion into Anthropic. In return, Anthropic got $5 billion. Oh, and they also got $5 billion from Microsoft and another $10 from NVIDIA. But anyway, the $30 billion, I think that they got back about 3/4 of that in commitment to use Azure, which is Microsoft's web services. Amazon invested in Anthropic $8 billion. In return, the Anthropic uses AWS, the Amazon Web Services.
The cloud.
Google invested in Anthropic. They invested $3 billion. Google has their finger in just about everything. Amazon does too.
Oh, yeah. And actually, I think all of them are diversified in that they're investing in Anthropic and OpenAI.
OpenAI, yes.
So, which actually, that's smart. But this circular sort of pumping each other up from a financial standpoint to make it look like they're having all these gains that's kind of scary. I can understand how people are concerned about there being a bubble.
Yeah, I think there is a bubble. They're moving money in a circle, which is making this bubble, which I think it is, lasting a little bit longer than normal because it's not being funded by debt. That's what happened in the dot-com era. When that went down, that was all funded by debt. So that was a real disaster because the debt collectors came calling and nobody could cover their obligations. But We'll see what becomes of this. We've reduced our investments in AI, which we're paying a price for right now because they're still doing okay. But we've moved it into defense stocks and some other things.
Defense stocks in Europe.
In Europe, yeah.
Waiting for whatever to happen over there.
So, yeah.
No, we still have investments. Yeah, it's just not the sort of the kind of, you know, out there, high valuation, no return, no money.
Yeah.
Kind of folks.
Can I bitch about a couple other things?
Please.
Okay. One, SCOTUS is getting involved in cases that are not related to the U.S. Constitution, like the recent overturning of a lower court stay on Texas's redistricting, the gerrymandering that's going on. That in Texas, it was requested by Trump of Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, to violate their own constitution. Actually, they had to change the constitution because normally they do the gerrymandering or redistricting is the polite word for it. They do that after the census comes out.
Yeah.
And they do it based on population, which just makes sense.
It's supposed to be every 10 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So in retaliation for Texas doing it, California is doing it in the opposite direction, and they're going to offset the 5 seats that Texas was supposed to get. However, Texas's has been put on hold by a federal judge. So we still, California passed Prop 50.
Yep.
So we're going to be doing it.
Yep.
We meaning us in California.
And I'm planning.
Yeah. Well, I'm not. But yeah, we canceled each other out on that one. But you were fair. You took my ballot to the ballot box.
And I did not throw it away. I actually put it in the ballot box.
Yeah.
I thought about it for a minute.
We could have thrown both of them away. It would have made the same difference, I suppose. Speaking of ballots, mail-in ballots.
Ugh.
I wouldn't vote otherwise. I really don't think I would. If they made Election Day a national holiday where everybody's working, they can go at their own leisure. They don't have to try to do it over the lunchtime or try to make it to the polls before 7 o'clock when they just left work at 6. So that would be the only compromise I would see. And I would require voter ID with in-person voting.
We used to have that, and I haven't voted in person in such a long time.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't know if they still do it or not, but we used to.
Yeah, they used to log you in. You used to show your driver's license. And
you were on a roll because you actually had an assigned polling place that you
yes.
went to.
Yeah.
So they were expecting you, and then they wanted you to verify who you were. So, mail-in ballots, I really like them. I agree. So the cat is pawing at me because she's trying to tell me that it's time to watch TV. So why don't we find out what Frank's listening to, and then we can go watch TV.
Oh, my favorite part of the podcast. What I'm listening to is Van Morrison's recent album, Remembering Now. And I wrote up my thoughts on it, a couple of bullet points, and I thought I'd use some of this AI technology. So I fed my bullet points and suggestions on a review and a kind of not a recap, an overview of the album. I put it into OpenAI, not OpenAI, I put it into Claude, and this is what it came back with. So it's Remembering Now by Van Morrison. Van Morrison returns to form. Van Morrison's 2025 release, Remembering Now, finds the Irish legend in a reflective mood, delivering exactly what the fans have come to expect from his later work. Soulful grooves, jazz-inflected arrangements, and the unmistakable voice that can turn any even simple phrases into something transcendent. The album doesn't break new ground, but that's not really the point. Morrison sounds comfortable with it here. The production is warm and organic, with live feeling performances that showcase his talented backing band. There are a couple of standout tracks on there, and I don't remember what they were. I didn't write it down. But the bottom line is Van Morrison fans are going to like this. This is pretty much what he's been doing for the last couple of albums. People that are not fans, it's not going to change him and turn him into fans. It's not really earth-shattering. Anyway, we got to run because the cat's bothering us. By the way, don't forget to visit our website, where there's a blog on there, and that website is www.2voices1journey, just spelled out. There's no number one. It's 2voices1journey.com. And oh, by the way, if you want to read the article on Trump's gun, that's posted in the blogs. There's a picture of the guns, and then there's an article. I think it was from the Daily Beast. I'm not sure whose article it was right now, but that you can read that there. Anyway, thanks for joining us on this winding road. We'll see you at the next bend.
A quick correction. The dollar amount that Microsoft invested in Anthropic was $10 billion, not $30 billion as stated in the podcast. What came back to them was $8 billion in purchases by Anthropic of Microsoft services. My apologies for the error.